describing what it looks like when service is no longer born out of worship. Here's Pastor Damian Kyle.
All of this kind of huffing and puffing and getting upset, and I'm distracted with much serving, get angry with other people, I even get angry with God. Why don't you give us more servants here in this area? When all of this agitation and emotion is going on, related to my Christian service, especially here where it's directed toward those that have taken a place at Jesus' feet, then I flip those priorities.
It's been well said, the things that matter most must never be at the mercy of lesser things. We can spend too much time on what is urgent and not what is important. We'll hear a case in point on today's According to the Scriptures with Pastor Damian Kyle. We'll hear of two priorities, loving God and loving your neighbor. And starting with the latter, from Luke 10, verse 32, here's Pastor Damian.
Likewise, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, he came near to the man and he looked, so he investigated it a little bit, he analyzed it a little bit, and then he also then passed by on the other side. This guy's heart sinks again. Maybe the priest was having a bad day, but the Levite will get me. But both the religious leaders do the same thing ultimately. And then Jesus said, but a certain Samaritan. And Jesus calls the Samaritan a Samaritan. The Jews hated the Samaritans, and the Samaritans didn't think much of the Jews. And at the time that Jesus talks about this, as is recorded in John's gospel, is that the Jews had no dealings with the Samaritans. They hated the Samaritans. And Jesus is going to make him the hero of the story, because the Samaritan is just a common person. He's a common person. He hasn't gotten caught up and lost into a religious world like the other two did, in thinking that their spirituality is based upon how much they know or the position that they hold within Christianity or within Judaism, as opposed to what kind of a human being they actually are when they run into need in their neighbors. And so a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed by, he came where the certain man was, and when he saw him, he had compassion, and he cried, and he wept, and he clutched his heart, and he said, I'm such an empathetic man, I feel his pain, and then crossed the road and went on his way. No, when you run into somebody in this kind of condition, you don't judge compassion by an inner emotion. You do something with it. And so out of that compassion, then he went to the certain man, bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil to soothe the wounds, wine, alcohol in order to disinfect them, set him on his own animal so that he could ride and the Samaritan would walk, brought him to an inn, and then took care of him through the night. His business required that he would continue on the next day, but when he had to depart the next day, he took out 2 denarii, 2 days' wages, for a laboring man. I don't know what you make in 2 days, but you can stay in a hotel for a number of days with meals, typically, on that. And so he gave that money then to the innkeeper and said to him, take care of him, whatever more you spend on him to make him well, put it on my tab. When I come again, I will repay you. And so Jesus then poses the question in terms of define neighbor for me. He said, which of these three do you suppose was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves? And the lawyer said, he who showed mercy on him. And you notice that Jesus calls the Samaritans by name. And when he does, and he makes the Samaritan the hero of the story, that's like setting a bomb off in the middle of things. He is no respecter of persons. He will tell anyone and everyone, including me and you, the truth about ourselves and not what people think about us. And so this man, the easiest answer that he could give is the Samaritan. But he can't even bring himself to say Samaritan. So he says, he who showed mercy on him. And Jesus then said, go thou and do likewise. And so that is the gist of what a neighbor is. A neighbor is someone who is near me in need. That's my neighbor. That's what he defined it for them. You want that for the religious discussions? You want to tell people where I stand on this? It is anyone that is near you in need, as evidenced by the Good Samaritan. And one of the things that this passage teaches us, and it's such an important one for my own heart, and I usually will teach this as the devotional aspect at that site on a trip to Israel. This parable is so important for any of us who've walked with the Lord for any length of time, say 5 years or more. Because what happens, and especially I think in the Western world, United States of America, is what happens is we come to determine our spirituality based upon how much we know spiritually, how much of the Bible we know, and knowing the Bible is very important, rather than judging my spirituality to be based upon how much of the Bible do I know, and how much of that then do I put into practice in my daily life. And that was the failure of the priest and the Levite. They knew mountains of theological information, and none of it translated into the daily of their life in their interactions with their fellow human being. And so it's good for us to ask ourselves, especially the longer we've walked with the Lord. I think I'm at about, well, a lot of years at this point, and about 40 years in terms of walking with the Lord, and how easy it is to just be an information machine, know all of these things, and then when I'm really forced to stop and ask, when was the last time this translated into caring for someone in a personal, physical, spiritual, or meaningful way in their lives in the course of my coming and going in life? And if I'm amassing this huge amounts of theological knowledge and it isn't translating into that in our lives, then we're not becoming anything remotely like Jesus. And so it is such a practical, important warning to us. It is so easy, ultimately, as Christians, again, especially in the United States of America, but the world has become very small with technology, where we can access teaching, we can access learning. You know, I mean, 150 years ago, you were going to get 3 sermons a week, tops, in any church that you attended. You'd get a Sunday night, a Sunday morning, and a Wednesday night, and that would be the extent of exposure to teaching and learning the Word of God. Now you can listen. There's uncountable thousands of teachings on the internet, and so much great teaching on the internet, and we can come to amass all of this great knowledge and convince ourselves in kind of that American way that we are deeply spiritual by virtue of it and cease to have it flowing out of our lives towards our fellow man. And then following this, we're told that as it happened, as they went, that he entered a certain village and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And so he comes to what we know from the other Gospels. He comes into the city of Bethany, just about a mile outside of Jerusalem, on the eastern side of Jerusalem, just kind of a stone's throw away. And Bethany was a village, as is described here. And there was the home of Martha was there. And Martha's the kind of one of the members of that famed trio, the same family, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Jesus having raised Lazarus from the dead earlier in his public ministry. So he comes to that home. Jesus, in his journeys into Jerusalem, in the course of his back and forth from the Galilee down into Jerusalem in those 3.5 years of his public ministry, he would never necessarily stay in Jerusalem. He would go to Bethany and stay. And on the final week of his life, when he goes, he knows the cross is coming and there's so much activity going on in Jerusalem, he never spends a night in Jerusalem. He always goes to Bethany in order to spend the night there in the home of these who had become his friends. Now, realize that the common people were hearing Jesus gladly at this time, but the outward, the religious establishment was very, very hostile toward Jesus, and it was dangerous at this point in time as a Jew to identify with Jesus publicly. And yet here is Martha, much to be commended. She owns the house, apparently, and her sister and brother live with her, and she opens the house openly for Jesus to come in for hospitality in her home. And so it's a home he would have been very, very familiar with. A beautiful, beautiful scene. All of them together, no doubt the disciples, the 12 with him as well. And Martha had a sister named Mary who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. And so Jesus comes into this scene. Everybody kind of moves into their different roles after some time passes by. Martha is, as we'll see in a moment, busy kind of in the kitchen preparing a meal for Jesus. And the 12 that are with him, or however many there are, not an insignificant thing considering everything had to be made by scratch. You couldn't order out pizzas. And then such a large group of people. So she's in the kitchen doing what she's doing. And then after a time, Mary comes to where Jesus is seated, and then she proceeds to sit at his feet and to talk about the 49ers and the Raiders. No, that's not what she did. When you have access to Jesus like this, and we do, she takes and sits at his feet because she wants to hear his word. He's imparting spiritual instruction. So this is going on. We don't know how long it went on, but Martha, she was very distracted, we're told, with much serving. So she's very distracted, huffing and puffing in the kitchen. And we'll see why in just a moment. So she's just busy as can be, and so much work to do, and getting the meal ready and everything. And then finally, that's all she can take. She can't take no more, to quote Popeye. She comes into the room where Jesus is there with Mary and others, and she said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me." So you can almost see the veins in her forehead. So she's pretty upset. Now, I think we've all been in situations like this in life. I think we've been in situations like this in life where we have been the Martha and we have been the Mary. You ever have someone do something like at a family gathering, or doesn't even have to be family or friends or whatever it might be, and somebody just does something and says something that is so weird and hostile and aggressive and inappropriate that it's like everybody just looks down and tries to pretend that this person did not just do what they did? Now imagine she comes into the room and this is what she says. Imagine what she made Mary feel like this good-for-nothing, lazy person in here doing nothing while I'm doing all of the work. And she shames her sister right in front of the entire group. And as if that isn't enough, she then takes and rebukes Jesus and tells him what he ought to be doing but was not doing. So she corrects him as well, telling him to order her to help me. And Jesus answered, and he said to her, Martha, Martha, you are so right. What was I thinking? Is that what he said? Whenever Jesus, if he does in like a dream or a vision or in prayer, if he repeats your name, sit down. You know, the old saying, when you've been put down, sit down. It's never a good sign. Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. This doesn't have anything to do with Mary. This is you. You've worked yourself into a frenzy here, doing all of this that you're doing and getting so upset about it, and then trying now to take out your frustrations on her, and then trying to pull me into what you want me to do here. You are troubled, worried and troubled about many things. Now, if Martha, if she had just, and Martha's a doer. She's a doer. There's no two ways about it. And if she had just done her doing and done it with the right attitude, and then Mary gets to do what she's doing, would have been the picture of peace. This wouldn't even be in the Bible for our instruction. So Jesus informs her, listen, you think Mary's wrong? You think I'm wrong? I'm telling you, there's something wrong with you and your attitude and what is happening here. And then Jesus goes on and he says, but one thing is needed, and that's a plate of tuna fish sandwiches. That's not what he says. That was she was working on, or whatever it might be she was working on. One thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, the part of sitting at his feet and listening to his instruction. Given the choice between, Jesus is saying, given the choice between having a wonderful hot cooked meal and being left alone in this other room, sitting in a chair by myself while you two are preparing the meal, or having a choice of having somebody sit at my feet and listen to my spiritual instruction, I will always take and prefer and choose somebody sitting at my feet over the worship, the adoration, the fellowship, over the Christian service. And so he said, Mary has chosen that good part which will not be taken away from her. You're trying to pull me in? On this, I will never cooperate with what you're asking me to do here. I will not play any part in taking that away from her. And so the importance of what is a priority to Jesus. And it isn't any accident here that this entire incident in Luke's gospel, that this contrast between Martha and Mary here as it sits following the parable of the Good Samaritan, where the parable of the Good Samaritan encourages us to not merely be knowers, but to also be doers of God's word. Doers and busy about God's business. But doers have a weakness, and the weakness is the weakness that Martha is showing here in the passage. And that is to elevate Christian service above the devotional life or the relationship side of Christianity, and then everything is upside down. It's fascinating that whenever, and they've done studies on this kind of thing, and then any time I've ever known about a restoration process personally, where a pastor crashes and burns for whatever reason, always, one of the things that comes out is somewhere in the course of his Christian service, he has begun to neglect the time at Jesus' feet. He gets it upside down, forgetting that Jesus did not call us as Christians because he needed slave labor somehow in the world. He has all of the labor he could ever want in the angelic realm, or he could produce it in any way that he wants. He called us to relationship, and then the service is to come out of that relationship, and her service is not coming out of that relationship. And so the warning, I mean, if we ever find ourselves in Christian service and we're huffing and we're puffing and we're mad at everybody, all those people in the sanctuary, and I'm back here in the kitchen and getting everything prepared and setting up these chairs and doing all this kind of stuff, and I get here so early, and they just come and they just go and get in their cars and leave. They don't even know what's happening. And so anytime there's, you know, all of this kind of huffing and puffing and getting upset, and I'm distracted with much serving, serving's the most important thing that's happening here, or whatever, I get angry with other people. I even get angry with God. Why don't you give us more servants here in this area of whatever, and become worried, as Jesus puts it, and troubled about many things, is always good for those of us who are doers. And I am a doer. There's hardly anything I enjoy more in life than a task that is accomplished. It brings me great satisfaction. But when all of this agitation and emotion is going on, then related to my Christian service, then it's a clear indication, especially here where it's directed toward those that have taken a place at Jesus' feet, then I've flipped those priorities. Now, one of the things we have to really rescue both of these women from the stereotypes that get attached to them. And very often we just look at, you know, Martha is likened to this carnal doer and get out of her way. I mean, she's a Christian, but I mean, by the skin of her teeth. I mean, you get on the wrong side of her and she's going to take your head off, and that she's this kind of a person, not a terribly deeply spiritual person. But earlier in Jesus' ministry, when Lazarus had died, she was the first one that came to Jesus when he came to the city of Bethany to raise Lazarus from the dead. And she said to Jesus, "If you had only been here, my brother would not have died." She knew who Jesus was. She knew his power. A little bit later here in Luke's gospel, a little bit later in the course of things, she is going to find herself in exactly this environment again. And there's no huffing and there's no puffing. There's just joyous service and thrilled to be doing what she is doing in her way for the Lord. In other words, she learned the lesson that she needed to learn here. She lost perspective. We all lose perspective. I certainly have. And so never look at her as like the doer that is just this carnal person, and what are you going to do with them? We got to put up with them because they're Christians. And then we have to rescue Mary from being portrayed as just this starry-eyed, never do anything kind of person, so heavenly minded that she's no earthly good. And Jesus rescues her from that stereotype, and she is stereotyped in that way very often when he declares there in verse 42, "But one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part." It wasn't that necessarily that this came any more naturally to her than it did to Martha. We can't assume that, though she always finds herself at Jesus' feet every time she's mentioned in the scriptures. But she chose that. In other words, there came a point, perhaps in the preparation of the food or whatever's going on in the kitchen, where she realized this is at hand, and now I'm going to choose to move away from this and sit at Jesus' feet. People that develop a devotional or a deep, beautiful, current relationship with God, so often somebody that looks at it might look and say, well, of course they do. That comes naturally to them. They're just naturally one of those people, and I'm naturally one of these people. And then we hide behind the excuse and the caricatures of Martha and Mary. But she sat at Jesus' feet, not because she didn't have 100 other things to do herself, but because she esteemed that to be the greatest thing that she could do, and then chose to do that.
Pastor Damian Kyle underscoring the importance of the choice to worship Jesus This is According to the Scriptures, and what you've heard today was just a small portion of our study in Luke chapter 10. To request the message on CD, you can reach out to us. Our phone number is 209-545-5530. Again, you can call us at 209-545-5530. You can also listen to our programs at accordingtothescriptures.com and through the Calvary Chapel Modesto app. You'll find us on Apple Podcasts as well. According to the Scriptures is made possible in part through the generosity of you, our listeners. It's easy to donate online at accordingtothescriptures.com or by calling 209-545-5530. And let me also give you our mailing address. That would be According to the Scriptures, 4300 American Avenue, Modesto, California. The zip code is 95356. Well, that will do it for today. We'll pick up right where we left off in Luke tomorrow on According to the Scriptures with Damian Kyle. This program is brought to you by Calvary Chapel, Modesto. What are these days?